Words about that beautiful wazifa you had us singing.
So this is a practice that is given to us by Murshid Hidayat in Inayat Khan. And the singing wazifas are a practice that is done as a choral practice for a group, but we're offering it here at camp as an individual practice for singing. And so, Hazrat Inayat Khan teaches us in the mysticism of sound that the power of the word, this vibration, and hidden in that vibration in the word is a particular element. It's a secret that has an effect upon our being. And so, with these words, Ish Allah Ma'bud Allah, which is how Hazrat Paramurshid Inayat Khan gives the practice, and also Murshid Hidayat Inayat gives the practice. So Ishkallah Ma'bud Allah, and the elements in this are earth and fire and ether are the prominent elements. And Murshid Hidayat teaches us in the chromatic zikr, there are particular sounds for each element. So ah is the sound of the earth element. O is the sound of the water element. E is the sound of the fire element. Ugh is the sound of the air element. And ooh is the sound of the ether element, like in the sacred sound ooh. So we can hear in this first word, ish, hidden within ish is the secret of the fire element contained in that. It's quietly in there, softly in there, ish. And on the it's like we're lighting the spark of a flame that's on the shrine on the altar of our heart. So, ish. And in Ma'bud, Allah Ma'bud, just feel that. Allah Ma'bud. It softens the heart. Ma'bud. You feel the warmth and glow of that sound. And then in Bud, Ma'bud, we hear this sound of ether, ooh. And that sound is like the radiant heat of that flame rising on the air and merging with the etheric, all-pervading love and light of Allah. Ishq Allah, Ma'bud.
Should we sing it like 11 times now? Again? Beautiful. Thank you so much. There's a few seats here and one back there.
Ishq Allah Ma'bud Allah.
Hear the birds. They're singing with us. I was had the great good fortune of doing a retreat with Pir Vilayat a long time ago. I was only three at the time. But anyway, we were in the Alps, and I would meet with a retreat guide because I was doing an individual retreat. And every time we would meet, we met, you know, in this grove of trees, all the birds came and sat and were singing, and she said, they fill our atmosphere. Another time, some monks were sent. I had had an experience some of you know about in India, and they kind of came to do a special hoogie-woogie. And the birds came in the house. These little beautiful Carolina wrens were singing. It was like, what? You're not supposed to be in here. They said, they're the gurus that have come.
One lives in my house. It comes to the dog door every day.
See? They know. They feel it.
And beautiful. Then the winter time she walks in the living room and sits on the house.
I love it. I love it. Well, one story about the snake that you forgot to tell this morning, my dear. When I had asked Murshida Vera if I could meet with her, it was at Heart Song. It was at the dedication of the Heart Song retreat. She was the kickoff act there to dedicate the shrine. And I had she was giving this beautiful retreat on the inner child. And I was so deeply touched and grateful. I felt, oh, she's the teacher that I'm looking for. So I asked if I could meet with her. Well, it was all done through notes, you know, because it was all had to do be done proper. But anyway, she then called me to her to walk with her back to where Kabir lived, and at that moment a bright green snake crossed the path, and then that it happened with us is special. Well, today, the secret of happiness. I hope the crowd's as big tomorrow and the next day. But I wanted to say a few quotes, because I think this is what got me started on this class. And it's this quote by Hazrat Anayat Khan that says, the secret of happiness is hidden in the veil of spiritual knowledge. But there was a song, you know, Kabir always pops up in my head, and I see his little blue eyes glinting around. Do you remember the song that he had, Khusro, the secret of the knowledge is hidden in the...
Oh, yeah.
What is it? How does it go?
It is hidden in the knowledge of unity, unity. The knowledge of God is beyond our reason.
Okay. Ooh. It's beautiful, and that is very true. And so this quote inspired me, and I was thinking of Kabir and all of you. But there's this other quote, okay? And this is also by Hazrat Anayat Khan. Very important, and I think it was one of the things that touched me about that retreat with Murshida Vera all those years ago. And it said, the quality of forgiveness that burns up all things except beauty is the quality of love. Mm-hmm. Shall I read it again?
Mm-hmm.
The quality of forgiveness that burns up all things except beauty is the quality of love. So that's our first hint on the secret of happiness. And we've been talking about love, because when Murshida Rahima was asked, what's this class about? And she said, love. Well, that's true. And spaciousness. So I'd like to, these are words from an icon. I often kind of spin off and do a little commentary for those of you that haven't been in my classes. But this is these are Murshid's words. And when I think of Murshid, I think of many Murshids, but I am also referring mostly, because these are his words, Anayat Khan. And he says this, And this is in a section titled The Purpose of Life. In order to awaken love and sympathy in our hearts, sacrifices must be made. It's the first clue of the secret of happiness. We must forget our own troubles in order to sympathize with the troubles of others. Right? We feed others to forget our own hunger. Right? You know that. To relieve the hunger of others, here he is, we must forget our own hunger. Everybody is working for selfish ends. Now remember, he passed away in 1927, and it couldn't be truer than it is today. So we have a lot of work to do. He says this alone.
Next year is his 100th anniversary of Ours.
Of the Ours, yeah. No, I think we didn't pass that yet. Is it the Ours then? 100.
27.
Yeah. 27. That's right. Thank you very much. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's like Rumi. It's like all those great masters. And I know I've said this to you all before, but, you know, I was a child of Catholic school, and I'm probably one of the few that loved going to Catholic school and loved the nuns. I did. I can't help it. Wanted to be a nun. Can you imagine that? Anyway. I had a third grade teacher who was very kind to me. My mother and father were going through a separation, and I physiologized it. I was sick a lot that year, and she would always keep me in from the playground to not have to go out in the cold and things. She would always make it as if I was being punished, but she was really keeping me inside to protect me. And then she'd talk to me, and she'd say to me, never forget. It was like she was trying to help me, that there was something beyond this material world. Never forget that the molecules that Jesus breathed into this world are there. You just need to tune into them and bring them in. Never forget the great sounds of the great composers are there. Just tune in. And that's what we do as Sufis, right? We're tuning in. We're tuning in. I'm going off script here, but Zainab was talking about the trees bending towards the Zikr Hall. Nait Khan talks about that. If you look up in his teachings about the teachings on Zikr, he says that when we are together as a group performing Zikr, we are charging the atoms in the atmosphere. And they radiate out. So whatever we do isn't small, it's significant. And of course, the dedication of merit is really important. You know, I had the great good fortune of living in India and studying there and living with the monks. And they'd always say, Nuria, be sure when you say your prayers to save it. It's like the disk drive. You have to save your work. If you don't, it could all go away. And they would say also, and this is in the teachings, one moment of anger can erase a lifetime of merit. But they say by saving that merit, it helps to preserve it. So always remember that, and we'll try to do that at the end of this class. Anyway, only an hour. Let's go. He says, I'm going to skip a few of these things. He says great tenderness and watchfulness is required of each of us. Great tenderness and watchfulness is required of each of us. There's a chair here, my dear. Narana, would you like to come sit, honey?
I have a chair.
Okay. But you're so small. And it'd be nice to, you don't have to stand. You're small but powerful. That's the best part. Great tenderness and watchfulness is required of each one of us. The heart of every person, both good and bad, who's to judge, right, is the abode of God. And care should be taken never to wound anybody by word or act. Now, there's always this paradox in Murshid's teachings, because you could take that to such a degree. Pir Vilayat used to talk about that. Compassion doesn't mean that you're a wimp and you let people get away with things. Compassion can sometimes be being quite stern and calling somebody on things. So he was really cautioned us to misunderstanding these teachings. And with Murshid and Nait Khan, we were talking about that on the way down here. We were talking about the act of renunciation. It has absolutely nothing with giving all your possessions away. It has giving up our notions of things, being open, you know, not being attached to ourselves is really what it is, right? Not being attached to outcomes, not being attached to things have to be done a certain way. Believe me, OCD right here, I know that script. But, you know, I try to loosen that grip a bit because it's helpful to me and it's helpful to people around me. So we have to be mindful that he's saying one thing, but what's also underneath that? He says, we are only here. Oh my God, how true is this? It's incredible. We're only here in this world for a short time. Many have been here before and have passed on. And for this, it is for us to see that we live behind an impression of good. When Joe and I have been traveling, he's like, I am not giving any money to that maid for you making the bed, you know, when we're at a hotel. And I said, but remember, you know, my Buddhist teachers always said, leave a place better than when you found it. Mm-hmm. So no mess, and, you know, just try to lightly touch it and leave it a little better. That's what Mershid's saying here. You know, we leave an impression of good, okay? And then this is on being truth, okay? Leading up to a practice, by the way. And Mershid says, God is love, and if God is love, love is most sacred. Oh, by the way, Ali Cutter, I'm really sorry that I didn't clear out all the closets from our home. I left some things behind, and he's been so good to, you know, disperse of those things. So God forgive me. I tell all, I say, until you're willing to tell your deepest, darkest secret in public, you're never going to be free. Amen. Do I not get an amen on that?
Amen.
God is love. If God is love, love is most sacred. And to utter this word without meaning is vain repetition. So when we say our prayers, just, you know, it's like I sometimes have to start myself all over again because I'm at the end and it's like, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah.
It's like, nope, start again, right?
Oh, you mean I'm not the only one
with this? No, not at all. I had a friend, some of you know, in Genden, and his brother was a monk in Tibet. And he did a 3-year retreat. He came out of that retreat and he said to his family, I have to go back again, because the whole time I was thinking about, which was an honorable thing, building a house for my mother and father, you know, but he was preoccupied. So it's like meditative concentration, you know, we're really working towards that. The lips of a person to whom it means something are closed. You know, sometimes it's so precious you can't talk about it. You can feel it, share that. And that person will say little. For love is a revelation in itself. And no study is necessary. No meditation is needed. No piety is required. If love is pure, if the spark of love has begun to glow, we talked about them this morning with our, you know, beautiful teachers at the All Camp class about creating that space in the heart. But this is also very important, not only the space. He says, if the love is pure, if the spark of love has begun to glow, then there's no need to go somewhere to gain spirituality. Then spirituality is within. One must keep blowing the spark till it turns into a perpetual fire. The fire worshippers of old did not worship a fire which went out. They worshipped a perpetual fire. What is that perpetual, or where is that perpetual fire to be found? In one's own heart. So let's pause for a moment. And this is the sanctuary. Many years ago, I had that message. I was in isolation and I was feeling rather lonely. And I heard an icon's voice say, build the sanctuary within. So that's where it is. And so, you know, like when you go into a church It may be dark, but there's always one little flame burning somewhere. That's us. So just cast your awareness into that sanctuary, the heart space. And let's just five times breathe the word who, because the teaching goes on to say, the spark that one finds glowing for a moment and then becomes dim does not belong to heaven. For in heaven all things are lasting. It must belong to some other place. So love has become the word from the dictionary, and it has 1,000, meanings, but mostly it's this love light, bring that light, your awareness into that light, and let's just say the sacred word, who, like we're blowing on that ember and letting that light become larger and brighter, and it will light your whole being. It's that nor. So let's say, this on board, by the way, this next statement. To the one who knows what it means, love means patience. Love means endurance. Love means tolerance. Love means sacrifice. Love means service. All things such as gentleness, humility, modesty, graciousness, kindness, all are different manifestations of love. It is the same to say God is love and all is God. God is love and all is God. La ilaha illallah. When I was teaching college, sometimes the students would be in despair about something in their lives. And I'd always say, meet me out on the corner. I'll be the crazy woman saying everything's God. Don't forget that, The good, the bad, the ugly. The sorrow and the joy. They're all gifts to teach us something. And then he says, God is love and all is God. And then he also says, love is all, and all is love, meaning God. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about that word love, because I think sometimes we misunderstand that one too. It is so far in the universe out there that it does not mean attachment to anyone or anything. It means non-attachment, and in that way you can love completely. It's universal and it's really big. Really big. I think it's the thing that holds all the atoms in the universe together. It's a kind of attraction, isn't it? But it's not attachment. It's a different thing. And it's probably not what we think of as romantic love either. We evolved beyond that too, into something so deep and so beautiful. Love is all and all is love. Ish alama bura. Thank you for opening with that. It's beautiful. Anayat Khan says, to find love, to feel love, to experience warmth, and to see the world to see in the world the light of love and to keep its glow and to hold its flame high is as a sacred torch to guide one on our life's journey. It is this that is the purpose of life fulfilled. I'll read it again. I have a little dyslexia, so sometimes the words get a little jumbled. I'm so sorry. To find love, to feel love, to experience its warmth, and to see the world. No, I'm starting again. To feel love, I'm starting again. To find love, to feel love, to experience its warmth, and to see in the world the light of love, and to keep its glow, and to hold love's flame high as a sacred torch to guide one on one's journey. It is this that is the purpose of life fulfilled. It's that love light. Are you with me? Am I boring you? Okay, good. Murshid says, according to the common standard of life, a person with common sense is counted to be right and a fit person. But by a mystical standard, that person alone can begin to be right who is beginning to feel sympathy with humanity. And sometimes it's really hard, you know, especially in a polarized political environment. But still feeling that love, knowing that maybe we are different than each other. You know, I live in Florida. It's a very different political climate down there. I don't know if you've heard. I always tell people, we do not have to agree. I can love you and respect you. I don't have to agree with you. And it's made a lot of peace. Now Murshid says this. Truth is simple. These words we've heard probably from Murshid Siam. We've heard them from, let me see, I'm forgetting names. Joe Miller. Truth is simple, but for the very reason that it's simple, people will not take it because our life on earth is such that everything we value, we have to pay a great price. And one wonders, if truth is the most precious of all things, then how can truth be attained simply? He goes on to say, it is this illusion that makes everyone deny simple truth and to seek complexity. That's a big deal, I think. But something which every soul knows, proving what is divine in every soul and which it cannot help but know, that appears to be too cheap, for the soul already knows it. It's like, I already know that. And you know what? Isn't it true? Haven't you read Murshid's teachings or anyone's teachings and said, gosh, I already knew that? Well, that's the truth of it, which is so extraordinary. It's like, well, it's there. It just kind of took those words to sort of rekindle that and help me know that I know that. It's really true. Mm-hmm. But we're just trying to continually enliven it, illuminate it, let it shine out. And sometimes we're afraid to let it shine out. Believe me, I understand that. I haven't let it stop me one darn bit. But, you know, if you're bright light, you've got something going on, people sometimes want to bring you down to their level. And it's like, that's okay. How about coming on up here? There are two things, knowing and being. It is easy to know the truth, but most difficult to be the truth. Yep. Life's purpose is to be accomplished in being truth. Okay. I'm checking my time. We're over 15 after, or?
Can you say that again?
3:15. Which one?
you're a bright light, sometimes people want to bring you down to their level.
Well, you know, I've seen this in people with great success. And people will often, here's an example. You know, Mother Teresa passes away, and she did so much good in the world. And I'm watching the news of her funeral procession, and here are the commentators giving dialogue on how eager she was to possess property. Well, she was eager to possess property to help others live a better life. But they were really criticizing her. This was one example. Mm-hmm. But if you yourself, you know, perhaps you've experienced in the workplace, perhaps you've experienced it other ways, there can be a competition. Competition is so healthy. Mm-hmm. But not if it starts to become destructive towards other people. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that make it clear? Uh-huh. Be your light. Be your own light. Let it shine. Oh, here's another example. So my own teacher, Compto Rinpoche, God rest his soul. He's reincarnated, by the way, which is quite wonderful. But he was one of the teachers of the Dalai Lama. He was the minister of culture and religion to the Tibetan government in exile. He was a brilliant mathematician, a physician, an oracle. I mean, he was so humble at the same time. And believe it or not, other monasteries nearby were kind of envious of what was going on in his monastery. So they would kind of call the Dharma police to say, oh, he's not doing certain things right in his temple. That's what I mean. And he didn't mind at all. He said, let them come anytime, you know. But this can happen even in those kinds of societies where you think, oh, this is an illuminated society. It happens there. It's the human nature. That's human nature. That's not the divine nature. I'm sure all of you have experienced something of it. And I pray that it ceases. Light, love's light is love. And when the heart is empty of love, a person is living and yet not living. From a spiritual point of view, that person is dead. When the heart is asleep, a person is as though dead in life, for one can only love through the heart. If a person loves one and hates another, what can a person know of love? I know none of you do that, but Mershad's teaching us that nonetheless. We have to pay attention. This is so beautiful. When Yasmin was talking about Subhanallah, about that purity, I try not to speak during others' classes, but things come to mind. Now it's my time, so I can share it, but this is a quote by Mershad. He says, love is like the water of the Ganges. It is itself a purification. And you know, the thing about the Ganges is it has everything in it, you know, all the dead bodies and all the, you know, whatever. So it's not very pure. But the truth is it's sacred, and all the prayers that have gone into that water that flows, it is said of the Ganges. The Ganges isn't sacred necessarily because of her purity, but it's because of her acceptance of all. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the kind of love I'm talking about, right? Mother Ganga is not pure, is not sacred because of her purity, but it's because of her acceptance of all. Oh, come. Come, whatever it is, bring it. When love is awakened in the heart, God is awakened there. For when we have journeyed, we reach the goal as soon as our heart has reached love. And we can be so thankful for each other because we're all the cause of love too in each other. Seeing each other, greeting each other, the smiles, the hugs. Well, it makes love grow, doesn't it? I've seen tears already coming, you know, just, but they're tears of love and some sort of fulfillment. It's beautiful. So I'm getting very close to my end, I think. Yes, I am. I wanted to end with a practice. It's something that I found in my search that would encapsulate this idea of both love and truth, which is kind of the embodiment of this class. And this practice is called Ishq. It goes like this, let me say, Ishq. Like it, so it's like this lifting of something, this Ishq, this divine love, this fire element, but then there's this afterwards. So it's Ishq, and then it's followed with Hakika. So it's like this quickening. Hak is truth, right? So it's Ishq, Hakika. Isn't that beautiful? Do you feel it a little bit? Right? Like Ishq, Hakika. There's a little bit of jazziness to that too, right? So you can feel the Ishq, which is the fire element, am I right? And the which is like, well, I used to tell my students, I don't want to even be called Steph or Steph or Is. I'm just like, so it's kind of like that. It's like the sizzle of the fire, right? So, and then it's Hakika, the truth of that, the truth of love. So should we do it a few times together?
Yeah, Hakika means truth of love.
Truth, it means truth. Truth, Hak is truth.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, so Hakika. It almost has a feminine element to it, doesn't it? Yeah. I remember one time, you know, I have a great devotion to the Blessed Virgin. I think some of you know that in St. Teresa. And I was with one of my friends. She was teaching at, we were teaching at the Art Institute, and she was reading, someone can correct me on the title, My Country, My Tibet, is that it? Norbu Rinpoche, yeah. he lived near you.
Yeah, I know.
And it was somewhat an autobiography of his life. He's the elder brother to the Dalai Lama. And she said, man, I really like this. She was a literature teacher. Man, I really like this book. I wonder if we could get him to come to the Art Institute. I said, I bet we can. Yeah. He's not too far down the road. He's just over there in Bloomington. Let's call. Yeah. And he did, he came. And she was hosting him in her home, and we met with him, and we had people cooking and doing all kinds of things. He was a lovely person. And I remember her saying to him, that's what, it's the Hakika, this is where I'm off on my little tangent. But she said, now, you know, she was also raised Catholic, and she said, you know, what about the Blessed Virgin Mary? Because she's thinking all the Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, right? What about the Blessed Virgin Mary? He said, we have her too. She's called Green Tara. Same, you know, if you look deep enough, and that's why I think these teachings on the unity of religious ideals that Hazrat Anay Khan brought forth, if you just keep going deeper and deeper, you see that they are all really saying that they all have the representatives of the same things. They're following the same path. It sounds different, it looks different. One more little story. I am, this is a biography of Nuria Sabato. But anyway, I was a junkie for church as a kid. You know, you can't hardly get kids to go to church. All I wanted to do was go to church. So, you know, I'd say to my mom, can I go to those people's church? You know, as a Catholic, it used to be, it's different now, but you really weren't supposed to go to other people's church because there's only one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. But anyway, I should say, well, sure. She figured I can't get in trouble in those churches, right? So I'd go to all the different shows. I think Billy Graham even came up to the high school in the big, you know, I went up to the big tent, you know, and listened to him. And then I had friends that were Mormons, and I went to church with them. And so we had friends of the family. We had one good Jesuit priest friend, and he would come often for dinner. And I was very little. I mean, I remember, I think even, you know, I was sitting on his lap, and he said, well, now tell me, what are you learning at all those churches? You know, and I said, well, they all say things differently and they act differently, but you know, they're all going in the same direction, the same place, you know, And I always felt that. That's why when I came to the Heart Song Shrine and we had that universal worship, and I believe the subject was truth, and you read from those scriptures, I said, oh my God, I am home. This is what I've always really felt. Mm-hmm. It just, it's like others of you said it, I'm home, you know. So let me just say a few words about this practice, Ishq Hakika. It is said that the Sufis believe that Ishq-a-Hakika is the driving force behind creation and the path to spiritual enlightenment and union with God. How amazing is that? Maybe there's no other practice but this. It sounds pretty good. It is intense, all-encompassing love for God in Sufi mysticism. Ishq-a-Hakika. This concept emphasizes that God is the only true object of love, and that the ultimate goal for the Sufi mystic is to attain union with the divine through love. One other thing from this morning's teachings, I think we were asked, what does it mean to be a Sufi? Something in Nayak Khan's teachings teaches that, but I remember very vividly Murshid Wali Ali visiting us in Kansas City, and he asked that question. I must have just read it, and it really stuck with me, and no one answered. Well, I think a lot of people said, oh, it means love, it means, you know, compassion. And I said, and this is so true, I think, and boy, wouldn't the world be a better place? Murshid Nayak Khan says, a Sufi is a person that can take both their own point of view and the view of another. A Sufi is one that can take their own point of view and the view of another. And so in Buddhism, we say, it's neither this or that. It is this and that. It is neither this or that. It's this and that. So let's just check in my time again. We have a little time, and actually I don't think there's a class after us in here.
It's 3:50.
And we have time, right? Yeah, we do. And then we can have some discussion if anyone has any questions. So let's do this practice. Shall we do it 33? So we'll do it 33 aloud. Ishqa Hakika. And then we'll whisper, Ishq-a-Hakika, Ishq-a-Hakika. And then we'll just breathe it, sort of feeling, as Murshid would say, the charged, you know, I think he said atoms, not molecules, but feeling that vibration. Let me tell you one more story how important these practices are. So after I had that experience in India, I had, some of you maybe have noticed, sometimes I go into these shaking things, and it's an energy thing. I've learned to cope with it very well with the help of Pir Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan. When he came to visit us, I don't know if any of you met him in person. Some of you did. You know, he was short in stature. He almost seemed a little fuddy-duddy, you know, and he wore his little suit. He said, I don't have many attachments, Narayan, but I like my three-piece suit and my cufflinks. Mm-hmm. And he always wore a tie. He was very formal in that way. Although I have to say, I saw him in his underwear. But and he saw me in mine, so there you go. But I thought, I don't know, this was my ego. I thought, I'm going to have to check him. You know, I want to be sure that he's the real deal. And I remember he was sitting in our living room, and I said, you know, he didn't want anyone to call him by a title, by the way. You always had to refer to him as a diet. And that was hard, you know. In public, I always referred to him honorifically, but in person, I would speak to him personally. But I said, Hidayat, you know, I've asked a lot of people, and I did. I asked a lot of peers, and I asked a lot of merchants, how do I deal with this? I got a lot of answers, and I have to say, unfortunately, none of them were very helpful. It was a process I had to go through. I had to go through giving up a sitting practice for about 30 years. I could only do practices walking. I guess I intuited I had to move the energy because it very nearly killed me, and I'm not kidding about that. But at any rate, he said to me, "The problem is compression, Nuria. You have to learn to circulate that energy." So he gave me a breath, and I'd be happy to teach that at some point during this camp. It's called the stretch breath, where you develop an accommodation to encompass things. That was one. The other thing was the gentle singing zikr of Hazrat Naikon. Mm-hmm. He never said my father, by the way. He didn't privilege himself in that way. He always spoke with great respect of an icon. But he said, you don't even have to say it aloud. You can just repeat it inwardly. And he said, those practices, that's why I'm saying this about Ishka Hakika and this atmosphere. It's going to circulate in your system. It's as if all the cells are singing it with us, and it circulates through your lymphatic system, your blood, your circulatory system. And that, and he always calls it the gentle singing zikr. There's something about that where it's not rajasic, it's not masculine, it's gentle. And that was very healing for me. And I rarely have these sort of things that happen now, you know. So I'm very grateful to him because, and I realized, great teacher, and he was a master of the breath. He never spoke with the microphone. He didn't need it. He had a booming voice to his dying breath, practically. And, you know, for a time he studied with Vivekananda students. He wanted to learn how to master the breath, but he was a pretty incredible person, wasn't he? And extremely human. Never pretentious, never high, just right down to earth. So when we do this practice, remember it's continually doing us, and your practices are all continually doing you, always. Okay, so shall we do it? I am so thirsty. You know, I'm from South Florida, and it's always like we're swimming in the air, and so here I can, even though it's quite humid here, I think, with the it's moist, but I'm very dry.
It's been dry for a long time. The moisture's
well,
really
kind
new.
Of has, yeah. All around the, yeah, everywhere. So think of this great love that rises in truth. Ishka Hakika. Ish-a-hakika. 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 Hakika, Ishka 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 Hakika. 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 Last time.
Ishq a Hakika.
So when we do this as a whisper, think of this Ishq arising into this expanded state and Hakika. You know, when Pir Vilayat would have us do the practice, huck. It wasn't a wimpy huck. He made us really use this, you know, our solar plexus. And I don't want to startle anyone, so wake up, because I'm going to do it the way he taught us. And it was always like, yahuk, yahuk, yahuk. Do you want to do it a few times with me? Feel it. It wakens this up. And you know, never forget that an icon taught us, until we awaken the center, this is the seat of intuition. And this is the deep heart is here. And you know, a lot of times we want to, you know it, we feel it when something's not quite right here. Trust that. But let's also enliven it. And then we'll do the whisper of this Ishq a Hakika. But let's do just 11 of those hucks because they're pretty powerful. So let's do it. Yahuk! 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 I don't know. Let's count. Yahuk! Yahuk! Three more.
Yahuk! Yahuk!
Yahuk!
Yahuk!
Do you feel it? Yeah, if you're sleepy, do that a little bit. It'll wake you right on up. Okay. So let's now just whisper now more gently. We kind of open this space. And I hope we're not disturbing whoever's upstairs. But Allah forgives. Now just breathe and feel it in your bead and in the atmosphere. This burning love of Ishq kind of goes into a sizzle and rises in truth. Ishq a Hakika. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here, sharing your time, sharing your hearts. Again, it's so great to be here with all of you. I always long, you know, to be here, but I think it's, and it's no problem to come, but COVID has been a real deal. Mm-hmm. It's been a real deal. And, you know, I even recently, it was in June, I think, I had that razor throat COVID, you know, it was terrible, really terrible. Luckily, it didn't last long, but, you know, I live in the open all the time, out in the air and on the beach, and it's all around us, so, you know, be mindful. Mm. Wash your hands a lot. So I didn't come because I didn't want to be on lockdown, but, you know, what the hell. It's good to be on lockdown with all of you, and it's worth it. Yeah, some of you know my health wasn't so good, but it's so better now. I feel like I'm a miracle. He tested me for all kinds of crazy things. But I always say food is a blessing and food is our poison. And I realized there were a lot of things that were not good for me. I stopped them, and I moved through the pain, and now I move freely, you know. So I feel very blessed. It was a lot of prayer and a lot of work, but that was also something that didn't allow me to come. But I'm here, and it's great. It's really great. Really great. So let's just palms press together. Let's dedicate the merit. May all beings be well and happy. May all beings be free from strife, as we were told this morning. May